You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
In the Octagon, out in San Francisco, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle.
Do you like not care about your hygiene? Is that what we're hearing here?
I'm actually an obsessive hand washer.
Or maybe the best team in the MLS.
Wait a minute. No, Gashman, that's wrong.
Why?
Because, no, that's absolutely wrong.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXMFC Channel 85. I am Andrew Wiebe. David Goss is, where is that, Ben? Do we know? You're the research bear.
Is he still in LA?
Maybe. He might have moved there. He might have gone there for good. Him and Kaylin Carr just hanging out. Actually, I think he's on a plane today on this Thursday. Glad to have you with us. A big show for you. It's the research bear and I holding it down at the fort here in New York City. We've got Peter Vermees, the head coach, the soccer czar, the technical director of Sporting Kansas City, coming up in the second segment. It's a great interview. He talks about his time in 96, coming back to the league as a World Cup vet, as an Olympic vet, and thinking, whoa, this is a little bit haphazard. Of course, times have changed. He tells those stories, and he'll also tell you exactly what's going on with Sporting Kansas City ahead of the 2017 season. Some signings trickling through. We're going to cover some news here, Ben. We're going to talk about DuBois, Jermaine Jones. What you know about João Pedro? I'm not sure.
Not that much.
Nobody knows that much yet, but we will find out about him, and we'll tell you what we do know. We'll also tell you what we know about the situation in New York. The Red Bulls, things are up in the air. Once again, we don't know
that much.
That
things are up in the air with the Red Bulls over the course of 21-year history.
They found a way to be successful in spite of it. We'll talk about Ali Curtis and some rumors there, but also go behind the Dax trade. Is it the biggest in MLS history? Our own Sam Stachko did the reporting today to find out. We'll tell you all about that. We'll also dig into which teams still have holes to fill. The Revolution, they got some holes at center back. Minnesota United, they're filling holes, but it's taking some time. We'll talk about that. And then we will go to the mailbag, of course, where we've got some questions about Jonathan Spector. Dom Dwyer with the national team, Ben. Also, old school MLS penalty kick shootouts with the run-up. Marco Van Basten maybe off his rocker a little bit.
For all the people who watch MLS Live, you've all been watching those run-ups.
For the last three months
of the season, constantly on
they're
MLS
fun.
Live.
They're fun.
They are fun.
And there
them.
Goes, you know the, what? The, that's the an old school. That's an old school reference. The radiator is clanging. Disagreeing with our take on just how much fun perhaps those old school shootouts were. But before we get into some of this news here, because there have been some signings since we were at the Super Draft, I want to promote what's going on next week. Because first of all, MLS teams get together for preseason. Yeah, it's a big deal. They're going to do fitness tests. They'll do the beep test. They'll, you know, swim in the
Michael
pool
Bradley
a little bit.
Win the beep test.
Yeah, that's actually a good one. Let us know who you think would win the beep test. At Extra Time Radio, extratimeatmlssoccer.com. We can check those because usually they release those results. But it's the week of Extra Time Radio. It's the Extra Time Radio extravaganza. It's Extra Time Radio 5v5. It's some other stupid thing that I'm going to come up off the top of my head. Basically what we're doing, we're going to have 5 days next week. Weekdays, like normal weeks.
There are five days.
Fact check me. You're the research bear here.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
100%.
Okay. Good. We've moved on there. But we're going to have five shows. We're going to have the normal Monday show. Dave will be back. Maybe we'll pull in Kaylin Carr, get armchair analyst back here Tuesday. We'll have another show. Maybe you've seen our specials. Adrian Heath. Let's see. We had Peter Vermees drop a little bit early, but he's also in this show. We're going to have Dom Kinnear and Mauro Biello. Exclusive sit downs with both those guys from California. On Tuesday. On Wednesday, same thing. Oscar Pereja, Wilmer Cabrera, the head coaches of FC Dallas and the Houston Dynamo. Thursday, normal show. You'll get the ETR you expect. And then on Friday, Jason Kreis. And I want to tell you the beginnings of this story. You'll have to stick around, Ben, for the full thing. Jason Kreis says his wife is the reason why he's still an MLS head coach. Do you believe that? I mean, it's true, so you have to believe that.
I mean, I believe
it. Hey, this is DeAndre Yedlin from Seattle Sounders, and you're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Look, apparently his wife was the voice of reason when he wanted to quit at RSL. We go behind the scenes with the man who's now in charge of Orlando City. You want
to
listen to that one. With that, no more promotional material. Let's get straight to the news. The Galaxy, as they said they would, are reloading Ben. DuBois, Sebastian Legette, has signed an extension. Yeah, we kind of saw that coming. It's still a question mark, though, where he'll play, right?
Because towards the end of the season, he was playing in the center midfield, and I thought he had a real future there. I thought him, the pairing of him and Bajo Husidic was really what propelled them towards a good run towards the end of the playoffs, towards the end of the regular season,
yeah,
into the playoffs. But now it looks like that he's going to be playing on the wing, where he, when he first came to MLS, was played really well, but after his first half season, kind of fell off a little bit. So I'm interested to see if he can get back to that form. He's with the national team right now, so he's going to be ready to go as soon as the season starts.
No doubt about it. Kurt Anolfo with some decisions to make in that midfield because the Galaxy have made a couple big signings this week. Look, we basically knew Jermaine Jones was going to happen. That was not in the bank, but it was just a matter of when, not if. They did it with Tam, which we also expected, not using a DP slot.
Which they got by trading AJ De La Garza.
Partially, yes. Partially, yes. And that was a tough move. Like, I listened to AJ's interview on Corner of the Galaxy, which is a great pod out there if you're an LA fan or even just an MLS fan. They had an exclusive with Chris Klein as well. He's broken up, man. He's still in shock, as he would be. He was a part of that Galaxy family, perhaps even more so based on how many years he spent there, how many trophies he lifted, and what he went through during that period. So they used it to get Jermaine Jones. Chris Klein says he's maybe the best number eight in the league. Do you agree? I mean,
maybe, yes. But he actually didn't play number eight last season, so we don't really know. I mean, you have Kellen Acosta, who I think he holds the belt right now as a number eight in MLS.
Right. Doyle's not here, but I'm going to just executive decision. You got a drink. That's a darling.
Done. Yeah. there's Felipe with the Red Bulls. There's Alejandro Bedoya with the Union. Christian Roldan's coming up. One of Dax or Juninho with Chicago. One of them's going to play the number eight. Yep. I think the one that does has a shot to be in that conversation. So, you know, maybe.
Maybe. Yeah, but look, we know what Jermaine Jones can do when healthy, and that was the caveat Klein gave it. When healthy, and he's got to stay healthy.
He played less than 10 games last year.
He did play less than 10 games. It's a very, very good point. But at 35, he's still one of the most dynamic presences. I'm not just going to say midfielders. I'm going to say presences in the league. If he can stay on that field, next to him, if he's healthy, once again, is going to be João Pedro, who, like you said, we don't know that much about, but we'll tell you what we do know. He's a 23-year-old Portuguese midfielder. He's a number six. He's a true number six. He's about 5'9", but he's powerfully built. He came over, signed via TAM, via Vitória Guimarães out of Portugal. They're in fifth place right now. He started all 17 games for them this season.
Apparently he's had
pushed
a breakout
his way in.
He's had a breakout season with them. We saw some good things about him on Twitter. If you go to Doyle's timeline, you'll see a scattering report on him by a Portuguese listener.
Yep.
So if you want to know more about him, definitely go there.
Klein said this is what they needed. They identified the six as a place where they had to reinforce. They went out and did it. The TAM signing, once again, leaves them with some flexibility. This is interesting because there were rumors out there that Porto was after him, that other clubs, big clubs in Portugal and in some of the leagues in Europe, were interested in him. For MLS to beat them out to this and for the Galaxy to beat them out to this player is a big deal. And I feel like we've seen this trend this year. More young players, more players with upside, more players with sell-on potential, seeing MLS as a destination to continue their careers. And this guy at 23, you got to be excited about him. But that may not be the end of it for the Galaxy here. We know Alan Gordon is probably going to head to the Rapids. So maybe Jack McBean will finally get his opportunity there. But now Jonathan Dos Santos, they're saying maybe in the summer. Klein said, look, we know all about him, but we can't comment on him. He's under contract. And then there's still the matter of Romain Alessandrini, the Marseille winger. I mean, they're going to spend another DP slot, you figure, before the start of the season.
We do know that they definitely need some help on the wing. So they have João Pedro and Jermaine and now Gio.
Kucinic,
They have plenty
Garcia,
of players there.
Yeah,
they have plenty of players there. On the wing, they have Leggett, who I don't really think is a winger, but that's where they're going to play him. And they have Boateng, and then they have their couple of young homegrown guys, and Mendiola and Jameson. So I think that's the most obvious place to spend their second DP spot.
Yeah.
So this, I mean, if Alessandro comes off, and we've seen a lot of rumors this offseason from every team not come off. But if that does, I think that makes sense for the team.
Yeah, either way, the wing looks like a place for them to address some issues there. Maybe center back, maybe right back because they've lost that depth in De La Garza, but you figure still some moves coming from the LA Galaxy. Let us know what you think of their moves at Extra Time Radio, extratime@mlssoccer.com. As for the New York Red Bulls, I've seen reports out there that Ali Curtis is out. I've seen reports that that's not the case, that you know, Chris Armas is going to move up into that role, that Dennis Hamlett could move into the coaching role if Jesse Marsh leaves. I mean, there is real uncertainty there right now. What do you think the feel from Red Bulls fans is? And better yet, Red Bulls fans, hit us on holler here. We've about to set up a voicemail, which I will tease in the mailbag.
I think it's kind of same old for them. It's always dysfunction. I mean, we've seen it for 21 years. We thought we saw some consistency, and you know that can continue if these reports are inaccurate or
it could still continue. Let's say Jesse Marshall left, even if Ali Curtis was gone.
I mean,
conceivably, it could still continue.
Conceivably, but it's still you spent 2 years building up this whole project, the 300-page plan. All of that.
Maybe we gave that too much credence. Looking back, maybe we...
That kind of gets thrown out the window, though.
Does it? Because the plan is established. You've built your roster to those specifications. And if you think about the Rebels organization, it all goes up to the top with that style of play. That's why Jesse was over in Portugal with Leipzig. That's why he went to Salzburg, to make sure they're on the same page. The whole point, I think, is to keep it going even if people leave.
We haven't seen the Hamlet and Armas...
In decision-making roles.
And we've seen Hamlet as a head coach. It was, you know, mediocre-ish.
I don't know. The Fire made the playoffs and were right there in the conference finals for a couple years.
But then he hasn't had a job since, so we have to question about why that is.
That's a good point.
We just don't know. It's an unknown.
It's an unknown.
Going from something that is very, very known, that Jesse and Ali are going to get this team to the top of the Eastern Conference, MLS Cup contender, to what? We don't know.
Yep. Look, MLS Cup is the ultimate prize for the Red Bulls. We know that. They've got some shields recently, but still trying to build, still trying to figure out. Still some moves left to come, I'm sure, for them. We'll let you know as they come. And as always, we want your opinion on this stuff, Red Bulls fans. Why did you fire Mike Pecky jumps to mind when I think of that. But if you want to send that, yeah, if you want to send that, that's cool. Before we get out of here and go to break, and Peter Vermees, let's talk about biggest needs, Ben. And the Revs are rumored via Taylor Twellman to be after two TAM center backs, which seems to be a prudent investment for them, considering they basically have like two dudes on the back line.
They have
London
Woodbury and Javon Watson, and guess what? Those two dudes did not.
Right, and Andrew Farrell can play there, but
he kind of got pushed back out to the right.
None of those are ideal options. So that's a huge hole for one team. We know Minnesota needs a lot of different things. Goalkeeper may be their biggest hole, just in a strictly we're trying to field 11 players on the field sense.
Yes.
What are the holes that you look at when you look at teams, at transactions that may come down the line that you think need to be filled?
Well, RSL has yet to replace Burrito. So right now, I mean, on my depth charts that I have on my computer, Jordan Allen is their right winger. I'm not sure that's what – I love Jordan Allen, but I'm not sure they trust him for an entire season to
be the lone option there.
Exactly. Yeah. For San Jose, the left wing, I have zero players there right now because I have Simon Dawkins and Wando up top. You know, we've heard rumors about Darwin Quintero, and I'm a big Darwin Quintero guy, but we don't know if that's going to happen.
Shout out to Darwin Quintero.
Yeah, shout out to Darwin Quintero. But we don't know if that's going to happen. So those are two of the biggest ones that I see. What do you think?
Oh, man, I'm looking around. I think the question is, does Montreal need an attacking midfielder?
I mean, they have Jamali coming in.
Yeah, they do. They do, but I don't think he's an attacking midfielder per se. His rep is kind of more as an eight in Italy. So the question is, do they need it? If they do, they got to go out and get it. And Mauro Biello, you'll hear a little bit about the Piatti rumors and how they want to play in that interview next week. He basically said, look, we don't want to be a strictly counter-attacking team. So how do you figure that? The Lucas Milano hole right now in Portland, and we've heard Sebastian Blanco rumors. So that's one that you want to see filled. New York City FC, you have Mikey Lopez at defensive midfield, and they lost Areola.
Yeah, who was
but
fantastic.
Right, you got to protect that back line somehow. And
right now I have Pirlo, Tommy Mack, and Camargo, their recent loan signing in the center midfield. None of those guys are really going to do the dirty work.
Yeoman's work.
They're not going to be running
around
the field either.
Right.
So they need someone who can do that.
Yeah, we'll see what happens there. Atlanta, I mean, look, we've loved what they've done on the attacking side of the ball, but I'm not sure you have the steel right now in central defense when you're looking at a rookie in Miles Robinson. And then Zach Lloyd and Michael Parker. Both of guys who are more like read-the-game guys, and Lloyd had a tough season with injuries last year.
Lloyd basically was at the whole, you know, two-thirds of the season because of concussion. We don't know really his status. I haven't heard anything about him. And Parker was part of, I think, one of the worst defenses. And I'm going to say, you know, he did not have a great season last year.
That's probably
he was being turned pretty constantly last season. So I think, you know, relying on him to start 30 games for you, it's not really a good idea this season.
And the Rebels, center back as well. You have Kalin, who they re-signed. That was a big move for them. Doyle is super high on Gideon Ba,
I'm not
on that boat. I mean, we have yet to see. He could be really, really good, but he's coming off a knee injury. And
he was kind of exposed.
He was.
When he played last year.
Yeah, then you've got some young guys behind him. And then right back's a little bit of an issue, too, because Lade's coming off an injury, and Salzizo has had a couple good years, but you'd still like to have some depth. But, look, there's still time. Still times for MLS clubs to do stuff. February is a big month. We always talk about January and the opening of the window, and trades come in December, too, and the super draft and everything else. But if you look at the transaction page at MLSsoccer.com, February often really ramps up. So keep an eye out. Remember, preseason starting on January 23rd, an extravaganza of ETR coming next week. You'll want to stay tuned for that. You'll also want to stick with us for this Peter Vermees interview. That's coming up after the break.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hi, this is Josie Altador from the U.S. national team, and you're listening to MLS Extratime Radio.
I'm going to Kansas City.
Here in Manhattan Beach on Extra Time Radio, David Goss and Andrew Wiebe with Peter Vermees, the head coach and technical director of Sporting Kansas City. Peter, thank you for taking the time with us. I know busy days here, player meetings, games, everything going on.
Yeah, listen, I'm really not that busy, so I just thought I'd join you guys.
Just hanging out, doing much?
Yeah, I'm just hanging out in my room, getting a lot of naps. It's been really easy time.
Would you stick around and interview some other guys with us then?
Yeah, sure, I'll stick around as much as you guys want me to.
Oh, man.
I have a free day today. I'm all free today.
Don't make offers like that. That might not have been the way it was back in 96. I was sitting around thinking about this combine. It's my first in person, which is a little bit strange, but you've been at a lot, an awful lot. You were there as a player. Take me way back. Take me back to the first MLS Combine. What are your memories? How does it compare to this one?
Extremely organized now as opposed to then. Just the environment, the culture, the number of people, the support that all the players get. Look at the number of teams, number of staffs. It's incredible. If you just take the number of teams and then look at how they were set up, where they had just a head coach, an assistant, and then maybe a goalkeeper coach. That was really it. And today's staffs are incredible. I think we probably have, with all the events that are going on, we probably have close to 30 people here from the organization, if not more. So I think that goes for all clubs.
Tell me some stories about those days. What was it like for you? You were playing in Europe for years before that. You're moving around, doing your thing. MLS comes into being, and you think, what, you show up at the combine and you see what? I mean, there were hundreds of players there, weren't there?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to, obviously, I was playing in Europe and I wanted to come back to the United States. I wanted to be a part of the growth of the league. And, you go to the combine, you get invited. Nobody really knew what to expect. A lot of foreign players came in. They had no idea. Very little connection to them. They were asking questions. They had no understanding. So what do you mean I'm getting drafted? So you mean anybody can just tell me I'm going there and then I have to go there and I can't go where I want? So it was a lot of education. And listen, I think a lot of it was just unknown. And over the years, obviously, it's grown. I think MLS has done a great job with this event. The people that organize it are tremendous. It's not easy trying to keep everybody logistically in the places where they need to be. But I go back to it, the number of clubs now that are in the league is just incredible.
When you mentioned the unknowns, was there anyone that first combine where you were like, who is this guy? This guy's so good and hadn't really seen before?
I probably would say there was a lot of good players, and we got a lot of very high-level foreign players that, look, back then you just wouldn't know. Social media, all those things weren't available to you. So what was more of it is that I think back then you had so many players coming and trying out that you just don't get today because players won't do it as foreign players. They won't do it. They want guaranteed contracts. I mean, all that environment has changed. And then the level of money that's in the game, all of that has changed the way I think the combine is. And then the last piece is, I remember one guy, he flew from, I think it was Turkey, and the first practice or the first training session, he got injured, I think, 5 minutes in, and he was done. And he had no idea, and there was no way he could play anymore. I mean, his ankle, went like that, and
blew
he just
up,
couldn't
yeah.
play, and he was out. And so can you imagine the amount of resources the guy probably expended to get here, because the league didn't pay for it. And here's this guy with his opportunity was gone, and nobody ever knew who he was again.
Who were you at this time? As a player, as a person? Like, give us some insight into Peter Vermees and the mid-90s.
You know, think of it this way. I'd already played in the Olympics. I'd already played in the World Cup. I was the first American to play at that time. Division I was the highest level in all the world, best leagues in the world. So I was the first player to play Division I anywhere, first American-born player to play. I played in Hungary, Holland, and Spain by this time. And, yeah, I mean, I come back and I'm thrown into the combine for somebody to pick me. So that's much different than it is today, that's for sure. I think if you had all those things, you'd probably be at least the TAM guy, I think.
I think you would be at least the TAM.
I think that's where it was, but, you know, times have changed, and obviously it's good. Times have changed in a good way, because now I think there's a very good understanding of the player pool. There's a good understanding of how we have to get better as a league, and obviously it all comes down to being on the field. But the progress has been tremendous.
You got lucky. You got to go to the Metro Stars. You get to go back to Jersey, stay close to home. How excited were you when you heard that?
I wonder if that was lucky or if that was there's a little bit of shenanigans there.
Oh, yeah, no, a little bit.
You
scenes.
Wonder or you know?
You never know. No, I don't know. It was good. It was great. But like anything else, you know, you're throwing a curveball because a year later I got traded to Colorado. And I always, you know, when you're in it – that was probably the interesting thing for me. I got traded that next year. I was a captain of the Metro Stars, and here I get traded. And you guys don't know this, but to make a living at that time, so I played for the Metro Stars that first year. When the season was done, the Philadelphia Kicks in the indoor league came as a new franchise, and I was asked by the league to actually play with the Philadelphia Kicks because they were hoping that there was going to become a Philadelphia league. Or a Philadelphia MLS team at that time or sometime in the near future. And they asked if I would go play there to maybe help with the crowd because I grew up right around there. And then maybe they could transfer that crowd to the outdoor game. So I went and did that. So I just played the MLS season. Now I'm playing indoor. I did somewhere between 5 and 9 games a week for ESPN. I would do Sunday morning Dutch football game of the week, and I would get into a little booth with JP Della Cameron, and we would, you know, do a Dutch football game of the week. I do Champions League during the week. I mean, I was doing Cup Winners' Cup.
Up in Bristol?
Yeah. I would have to travel up there. Whoa. Sometimes by train. And it was a good ride for sure. And I was running my own director of coaching business for a youth club in the area. So you can imagine I'm doing all these things. I get traded. I go to Colorado, and I'm thinking, what am I doing? What's going
they
on?
They disrupted your business plan there.
They disrupted everything. Yeah. But the great thing is that I always say this. Then I get traded from there 3 years later, go to Kansas City, and all those moves wound up being the best moves for me because I'm in the place where I want to be.
You said it. You played in this World Cup. You played in the Olympics. You'd been all across Europe at that point. You proved yourself. Did you feel kind of like – you know, you wanted to grow the game in the U.S. You wanted to be there. Did you feel like you were sacrificing something? Did you have any second thoughts? Or was it all just, this is the path I have to take. This is the only option. This is what I want.
Yeah, it's a good question. No, I felt as if it's what I wanted to do. You know, I wanted to come back here. I wanted to be a part of this league. I wanted to help grow the game. I will tell you, I just never knew that I would ever get to this level. Because it's very rewarding to see how this game has progressed. It's really rewarding, and now you see, I mean, you don't see necessarily what the future looks like, but you feel really good about it.
When you're in that room for MLS Super Draft, and there's the pomp and circumstance around it, and the amount of teams there, what's the emotions for you? Do you look at your staff at all and be like, wow, I can't believe this. This is what it looks like.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I have a pretty interesting staff. Kerry Zavagnin and I. You know, our story is that we got traded for each other as a part of a trade. And when I went to Colorado, he went from Colorado to New York. And then we wind up meeting each other in 2000 and playing in Kansas City. And we've been there ever since together. And formed this you know, this relationship, a lot of respect for each other in the game. We're good friends. You know, we've embarked on this project here in Kansas City. At the same time, Zoran Savic was a player here in the United States, a really good player, then went on to become a really successful coach in indoor soccer, especially in Kansas City. Was you know, a big name, won a lot of championships, coached in the MLS with Preki, Kansas City guy. And then, you know, if you look at our staff now today, you got Brian Bliss, guy that I played with in the Olympics and the World Cup, got a lot of history there. For me, that piece is probably the biggest thing. It's the relationships, and to see how many guys from my generation are still involved in the game in a real meaningful way is a great thing. And that is what has to happen. And I told this to Don Garber the other day, and that is I commend him because he has been saying, you know, he always does his State of the Union each year at this event. And one of the things he always preached was that he was always pushing the owners to make sure that they kept hiring former players within their organizations. And I really believe that that's something that he wanted, and I think he felt that that was going to help the game and the league grow in this country. And we all have or give him a big thank you because he has been a champion of that initiative. And I think if you look around now and you see how many guys that are in prominent positions, technical directors, GMs, coaches, what have you, assistant coaches, all of those guys are, I think, a product of the initiative and the conviction that he had for that.
Definitely, when you look around, real agency from these coaching staffs, from folks trying to grow the game, there is a feeling of, you know, togetherness in the sense that we're trying to go someplace special. The last 10 years have been explosive in the growth between expansion and everything else, players, salaries, everything that goes along with that, academies. The next 10 years, let's go back to that conversation with Don Garber. If he said to you, what do we need to do, Peter, in the next 10, what would you emphasize?
I think we're already doing it, actually, and that is what we're doing is that between MLS and U.S. Soccer, look, we're educating, they're putting a huge investment into education. I think all of our coaches are buying into that because at the end, we all got to keep getting better. The other piece is that we are investing in our academies, in our youth. We want to be developing our own players, not just hoping that as they're going through the system, you know, the guys are popping up here and there just because they're passionate, they love the game, and they're finding their way. I think we all realize we have to be much more systematic at that. We got to have the ability to do it we have great programs to do that. I think those investments are happening. And I also think we're doing the other thing, too, is that we truly are now in a position to be able to evaluate where we are, where our improvements have to be for us to continue to grow our league and, more importantly, be competitive internationally. I think we all realize that's a big step. But as you guys know, that takes resources.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like the owners have not been putting in resources. They have. But one of the reasons why they have is because they believe in Major League Soccer. And the great thing is that you have, you know, 22 staffs now that all do as well. And I think we're working all sort of in the same direction under those initiatives. So those things are happening. The question is how consistently over, you know, is it going to take 3 to 5 years before that really starts happening each year? But I think once it does and we get over that tipping point, I think it's endless. And this, I think it was over time, this will be the league that players want to play in the world. I really do. I think it's going to come sooner than we all think.
When you talk about the coaching staffs around MLS, you talk about the league, you say we. In other leagues, that's not mentioned. You know, in the Premier League in Holland, they're not talking about we. It's individuals. How odd does it feel at times, or what's that experience like? You're working with other teams while also competing against them for a title.
I think that was created very early on in this league, probably more because of the business model and single entity. All the owners are partners with each other. When we go into our meetings today, whether it's a coaches meeting, whether it's a technical committee meeting that's dealing with the bigger issues of a club, we all have a responsibility, obviously, to represent you know, our individual agendas. But at the same time, we always have to be very careful because we are a part of trying to build this league. And when you're in that position, there's a lot of responsibility that goes with that. And it can be that every time you step in or you open your mouth, the only thing you're talking about is something that's good for your club, because we're all in this together. And when things get better, we all benefit from that. And I believe when we go into those meetings, the majority of the time, everybody realizes that, and we're trying to push towards that.
Collective is important. Of course, the individual is important as well. You've been in Kansas City for a long, long time now. I mean, in the technical side since 2006, I think, head coach since 2009, a player before that. You feel synonymous with the club. I mean, is this how special is Kansas City? How special is Sporting Kansas City? And before that, the KC Wizards? I mean, I have to imagine it has a really deep spot in your heart.
It does. I consider myself to be a guy that's always been pretty committed to things that I've done. It always affected me emotionally when I got traded from New York and then Colorado. But the fact that I've been in Kansas City as long as I have, the commitment that I know that I've made, but at the same time the reciprocation I've had from the ownership group and the community has been, you know, at times incredibly humbling. I know that I'm in the right place. I really do. I know that. I've had a couple of opportunities over the last so many years to do other things, but my commitment and my my dedication and passion is really in Kansas City. So it's a great place, and what's tremendous about it is we're constantly looking to push the envelope and get better, and that part is fun. You know, it's challenging, it's innovative, and when you're doing things like that, I think you stay connected to the opportunity of what's next.
What's previous is unfortunately a playoff defeat. How has that defeat stuck with you? I know that was a little bit controversial with the calls there. Is that the sort of game that you just kind of always have in the back of your head? Have you gotten over it? How do you deal with losses like that?
Look, we've had conversations about, you know, wins and losses over the years, and it's hard for me. I probably hate to lose more than probably I love to win.
That seems like a defender thing in some parts. And you had both sides of the field, so.
I did, but, you know, if I scored, then I'm winning, right? So I got to hold on. I got to hold on to everything. But I don't like losing, but I also was really, really proud of my team in that game because I believe that they left everything out on the field. What's always tough, I think, as a player, and more importantly, I think, as a coach, because you have so much more to worry about, is when you lose a game because your team didn't leave everything out there, they didn't put their hearts into the game. It's one of the reasons why I believe that we sell out our stadium every weekend, is because I think our fans connect with the fact that when they come, they appreciate and have a lot of respect for the fact that win, lose, or draw, our guys put everything out there, and they respect that. And there's been many a times that I've gone into our field club, you know, after the game, and you know, we may have tied the game or lost the game, and people will always come up to me, and I'm always surprised at it, you know. And what I believe to have been, you know, a very unsuccessful day, or I'm not happy with the way things went, they'll say, you know what, the guys gave everything they had to the last minute, just didn't happen, coach. You know, you'll get it next time. That is pretty rewarding. A lot of people don't think that, you know, as a coach, you pay attention to that. But for sure you do. And one of the things that I will say is that, look, yeah, there was a lot of controversy in that league. What I do know is that the league is committed to trying to fix those things. And at times, all of us as coaches, because we're competitors, we may every once in a while lose it a little bit. And we don't mean it. We're very careful, I think. And I think a lot of times we do a really good job of controlling ourselves in those moments, but it's hard to take the competitor out of all of us, because at the end of the day, what we have to do and what is our job is to win. But I think we all know in the back of our head, and it becomes clearer and clearer when we come to events like this each year, that the progress that we're making as a league is very evident with all the different initiatives that we're having. VAR is a perfect example. We're trying to get better, and mm-hmm. The good thing is that if that information gets out to our fans, I think it's important because they see that we're always trying to take the next steps to be better than we were last year.
Is there any one moment or one comment that you've ever think back on? You're like, man, I really wish I hadn't said that.
You know, the only thing that I think that I've ever said that I didn't mean it to come off that way when it came to the criticism of a situation with a game and an official. Was it made it sound like that I was saying that the official had something against us. It was almost like, you know, he was fixing the game. And by any means, that was never my I never wanted to give that sentiment or that idea across. Because, I know the referees have a tough job. I know those guys work hard. I think it was, I can't remember now, maybe 2014. I went to one of their camps, and I spent like a day and a half there, and I got a chance to talk to them, and I got a chance to see what they were doing and how they worked in the classroom, out on the field. It was a tremendous experience. And I know they're trying to get better. It's just like anything else. It's even like our teams. You know, you have young players trying to develop and bring them along. Yep. It takes time. I get that. But at the same time, when you're in the heat of the moment, you know, and I think also they have learned too as well that when the game's over, normally maybe something might happen, but then after that we see them the next week and we're like, all right, let's get on with the next game, and hopefully, you know, things are different this week.
Yeah, let's move on as well to 2017, Sporting Kansas City. You wear multiple hats, of course, head coach, technical director. It's a lot of work, I expect, but you look at this team, I don't think you've missed the playoffs since 2010. So
2011.
Yeah. Oh, 2011. Just missed it. I was giving you extra credit there.
Appreciate it. Yeah. I kind of let it go, but
yeah, you could. You could.
There you go. Very honest coach.
Thank you.
Got to have the facts there. Yeah. Tell me about your theory on roster building, because you've maintained success year after year, and in this league, that's not easy. Bonuses, everything else changes the cap. Yeah. Players come in, players come out.
Yeah. It's not easy because there's a lot of different things. Obviously, you guys know this. Over the last probably 5-6 years, there's been a lot of different player mechanisms that have been introduced. There was a CBA. Obviously, it has an influence on roster building. The other thing you have to take consideration, you have to take who your ownership is, what their philosophy is, what your market's like. Mm-hmm. You can just keep going down the list. And then, you know, it comes down to what does your technical side believe as well. We have a great communication line between the technical side and our ownership group. So philosophically, I think there's no doubt in my mind that we're all on the same page. What we do understand is that we're, at least in this short term 5 years, I don't know, but we're probably not going to be bringing players in that, you know, we spend a $5 million transfer and paying them $5 million a year.
Yep.
It's just not going to work in our marketplace. What I think we have done is we've created a model that works for us. As you said, what our objective is, and when I took over, my objective was is that what I didn't want us to become was just a one-hit wonder, that we win and the next year we're in last place. I just didn't want to be in that position. And so to be able to do that, it was really about us kind of building a foundation of young players that would grow up over time with us, and at the same time we could kind of backfill as we were developing those guys, keep backfilling players. Now, we also, I think, have done something a little different than almost all teams in the league. I think some have done it just because it came their way. But along the way, we've been pretty systematic at selling a player here and there, which is also, as you guys know, gives us so much allocation
injects
towards our cap.
Yep.
And it always gave us a chance. You may have gotten rid of one, you know, moved one guy on, but it allowed you to keep a core group together. Whereas if you don't do that, you might have to get rid of three or four. And now, all of a sudden, that really can drop your ability to compete. So that's one aspect. I think the other is that we're very specific on what leagues and countries we scout in. We don't scout everywhere because there's certain leagues that I just don't think the players there actually adapt and fit, not even culturally. It's just, you know, in Spain, a lot of teams play a 4-3-3. So do we. Portugal, the same thing. So we're going to spend more of our resources in areas like that. And then we also believe that there's certain countries that develop positions better than others. And then so we try to focus there as well within our team. We have made some acquisitions already. There'll be another one announced here soon. But it's guys that we've identified over the years that we're bringing in. I think if you go back, say, 6-8 years ago, there were a lot of times where it was the percentages were dropped. Now we probably have about 80% of the players on our team that we've scouted ourselves, and 20% are the ones that are presented to us by agents. Those percentages were flip-flopped probably 6-8 years ago, in that 80% were being always presented by agents, and we just didn't have the resources or the time to do the other way. And I think that's a great step, and I would say that there's a lot of teams that probably have had the same type of flip-flop. I can't, you know, tell you what their percentages are, but there's no doubt that they're doing so much more scouting. We're all more proactive about how we're going about things.
2017, we're looking at more high pressure from Sporting Kansas City. Fernandez comes in, Latif Blessing comes in. Those guys aren't like for likes, let's say, with 2013 team that had some horses outside, but they've got speed, they've got athleticism, they're maybe on the younger side from what you had last year. What do you expect from the team this year? Style of play? What are we going to see?
Look, I've been doing this for too long. There's no way to take the DNA of who we are out. We are who we are. Mm-hmm. We're going to play very similarly than we have played. Obviously, there's always a little bit of tweaks here and there depending on the people that we bring in and what strengths they can offer, whether it's in the position or within the collective. And that's kind of the that's the beauty of what we do as coaches. It's that process, it's that journey you go through the season to see how you continually try to tweak or get a little bit better here or there so that at the end you peak at the right time. A great player to look at that is Benny Fail Harbor, right? When we went out and got him, I say this all due respect to Benny, but he wasn't very successful in MLS, okay? He wasn't really even playing all that much.
Yeah, hadn't been.
And we extended some good resources to get him. Now, fortunately enough, I had Benny when I was with Ziggy. I was assistant in the 2005 World Championship with the U-20 team. And we had Benny. And what I loved about Benny is he had two really good qualities. I thought, first off, technically he was superior than a lot of players in the United States, especially at that time. And then the second piece is that he really loved and had a passion for soccer. I mean, he's the kind of guy that was reading about all the other teams because he was really interested in it, not because he was doing it as a job. It's just he loved the game. And I really thought that those two things when you have those qualities, they could easily translate into success. The fact that he wasn't doing well, I had been with him. I just felt that there was something there. And one of the things that happened is I see with a lot of players is that it's not that they're bad players. It's just that sometimes they got to get into a place where, whether it's the system, someone on the staff, what have you, it meshes with who they are, and now you bring the best out of those guys. And I think that's what's happened to Benny with us. And as we move forward, I think what you'll see is we'll continue to try to go and get guys that are that have some. I don't know what the percentage is, but of DNA of us, but I also think that we can also add to that once they're with us.
Well, one of the pieces it seems that's going to be part of that is Swope Park Rangers. You made some other additions from that team. How's that going to change this long-term roster building? How's that going to change the way the club's set up?
Yeah, it's a really good question because, we signed two players from there this year, goalkeeper Zendejas and then Tyler Pasher, plays left back, left wing, play right wing as well. Canadian-born boy, but that was the whole objective for us, right? Our first year, last year, being the foundation year, we definitely have an idea, a philosophy of what we want to do. And that is, at the end of the day, eventually that team has to be made up of the majority of the kids coming out of our academy. We're investing in that at a very young age so that as we can keep developing those players and they can just become just a part of our pathway. Obviously, you'll always find somebody here or there that you'll bring in from the outside, and then hopefully you use that same environment to transition them to more about who we are and how we play and all those things. That's paramount for us. We know that's the lifeblood of our club moving forward because of what we were talking about before. We know what our market share is. We know the size of our city, all of those things. And taking all that into consideration, the bottom line is that we have to be able to produce our own players. And everyone says that, and I get that, but I know that that's paramount for us. Again, I go back to it. Here and there, we'll purchase a player, but I think even you see when we go out and get a guy, it's usually, we don't overpay. We're very financially responsible in that regard, and we don't have the ability to make a lot of mistakes. So and I think that's why the greatest thing that I always say is that we have a great staff. They all work really hard. They get it, and they're all they're all locked into the way that we do things, which is tremendous.
One more for you, Peter. We'll get you out of here. Graham Zusi, right back, says Bruce Arena. At least that's the experiment. You played him a little bit there last year. Is that a good place for him at the national team level? Could he be a starting level Cowboy international right back?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, but you know, Bruce called me when he got the job, and he was talking to me, and he was talking about a number of players on our team. And one of the big things he talked to me about was Graham. He said that, look, I think if Graham's going to make the team, it's probably going to be at right back. He goes, what's your thoughts? Because he said, you know, look, I don't also want to mess things up for you in Kansas City. I want to be respectful of that. And I said, Bruce, look, you're fortunate enough to have seen it. We played him two times when you came to our place. We played him right back, and he played really well. He played really well.
Like, oh, where'd you get that idea, Bruce?
So he knew that, and we talked about it for quite some time, and then I had a talk with Graham, and the great thing about Graham, he's got a great attitude, and he's going to play wherever he can have the most impact and where someone needs him. He's not difficult like that. You know, he's a humble kid. He's going to do what's best for the team. That's one of the reasons why he's been with us for so long, because he's always been a team guy. It doesn't mean that he could wind up playing right back for the national team and at times playing winger for us and right back for us. And sometimes Bruce might, who knows, he might see that he's played so well at right back that, hey, I want to give him a shot at winger. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's what happens to players. But the fact that I think, number one, Bruce is really looking at him there. The other is that Graham has a great attitude for it. And the real question is, can he do it? I think absolutely he can do it. The great thing about it is that you take a player that is so good on the ball, who a lot of times outside backs wind up being on the ball quite a bit. You know, he now has a good entry pass, he can keep possession for you, there's a lot of things he can do. And the other thing, he's got an engine. There's for Graham to go, you know, box to box, that's nothing.
Not a question. Still waiting to see what happens in 2017 for Sporting Kansas City. Peter, thank you for joining us. We appreciate your insight. Good luck.
My pleasure, guys.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hey, this is Graham Zusi of Sporting Kansas City, and you're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Morning, there's no one else here. I'm alone in the cold October light. It's like a black hole growling grape.
Back now on Extra Time Radio from New York, New York. Once again, we are back. I'm Andrew Wiebe. Ben, the research bear, with me. Speaking of shout-outs here, shout-out to my guy Abner Aceves, who has taken over the production role on this show. You may know him from his incredible, what was it, the LA Galaxy? Was it that, The Morning?
Something like that. I don't know.
It's such a fresh memory. Yeah. It's such a fresh memory. Let's get right in to what you are wondering about. Jonathan Spector, rumored to be back to MLS. Not just rumored. Birmingham City's Gianfranco Zola is saying he is coming back. The rumor has been, say, Orlando, maybe the Fire. He's not on the allocation list, so it's a discovery thing. Orlando, they need center backs. They need defenders. This would seem like a good signing for them.
They need a right back. I mean, let's say Rafael Ramos and Kevin Alston are there right now. They were fine.
They could do a job.
Is Jonathan Spector going to play center back? I mean, they have a ton of center backs on the roster. Question is if any of them are actually good.
Yeah. Well, look, I think Tommy Redding has a good future.
Jose Aha,
which is one of the best names in the league.
David Mateus, Connor Donovan.
You're right. There's a lot of guys out there. We'll see. I mean, maybe he could play left back. Be cool to see him back, though. It's been a while. Dan Fleming on Twitter, what extent does Dom Dwyer fit into the U.S. once his papers go through? Do you think he could be a guy that gets national team call-ups?
I think he kind of missed his chance to get in this January camp. I think that's where he would have had to make a name for himself. I mean, you got Jordan Morris is not really – would you say he's in the 23 right now if you're taking –
Yeah, he's on the brink.
Squad?
No, he's on the brink. You're right.
So, I mean, he's Dom Dwyer.
Juan Agudelo is pushing his way into the nine, maybe.
You have, you know, Josie Altidore, Bobby Wood. Why are the names escaping me here?
I'm just
going to
let you rot out here. No, I'm just kidding. The point being is that, and we've talked about it on the show an awful lot, the pool is at forward much deeper than it has been in years past. I do think Dom could do a job, and I do think he would be better with better players around him, which is not to say Sporting does not have better players, but he's been isolated at times in that attack. But we'll see.
Can he do it? Yes. But will he get a chance to do it? I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's a big question. Let us know what you think, KC fans. Last one here. Julian Sacramento writes in about FIFA technical director Marco Van Basten telling the media that he is down with perhaps the traditional penalty kick shootout being replaced by the MLS-styled run-up version. What do we think of that? I mean, I like the run-up version. I actually think that the reason the league changed it was perception, not entertainment value. I just didn't want to have different rules from the rest of the world, which, look, you kind of don't want to have different rules from the rest of the world.
I'm just not a fan of PKs in general.
In general? Okay, look, so, I'm giving you two options. Yeah, you get the run-ups or you get the standing ones. Which ones do you want?
I mean, run-ups are definitely more fun. So probably the more fun option. I'm not sure. Just like, yeah. I'm not sure. I kind of feel like when the goalie, like if you watch the Tigres America final.
When he comes that far off the line.
That wouldn't happen if it was run-up. So like I kind of like the goalkeeper.
Yeah, because the goalie could just come out.
Talking some trash to the player right in front of him.
You don't think that would happen in
run-ups? I don't think he would go all the way out to midfield or wherever they're starting from.
He might yell at
35 yards. But like it just, Nahuel Guzman just get in the face, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think the excitement would certainly be there. The question is, do you want to be different from the rest of the world? But if the world adopts it, we'll see. Remember, IFAB are the ones that actually set the rules. It's not FIFA. So Marco Van Basten is not the end-all, be-all here. Hey, that's all we have here. For Ben, for Andrew, remember to listen next week. You're going to have one for every commute. You're going to have five shows, and they're really, really good. Dom Kinnear, Mauro Biello, Oscar Pereira, Wilmer Cabrera, Jason Kreis, and then the normal shows as well. Dave will be back. We might get Doyle on the line. We'll see. With that, we'll see you next week.